February 25th. Roughly 62,000 middle school students plan to return to classrooms for at least part of the week, bringing the total number of New York City students back in person to 250,000. A majority of the students who have returned already are white students, and roughly 70% of students have opted out entirely of in-person classes. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 52 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, it's 33 degrees and cloudy with the chance of snow. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amar Evering.
The previous program was Radio Gag, heard Tuesdays at 2:30 p.m. The time now is 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned. Okay, looks like we're experiencing some type of technical difficulties here, but fret not, we'll get it together here. This is what happens at times when we are doing things remotely, but we're still getting the hang of this. But with that said, though, this gives me a great opportunity to remind people that this is a great opportunity. I just say great opportunity twice. I realize that. To donate to this radio station by calling 516-620-3602. That number again is 516-620-3602. So I ask Milton right now, who is just try to refresh everything, and we should be up and running as soon as possible. But for those people who appreciate these foibles at times, and for me to interject during those foibles, well, this is a great opportunity to pledge and donate to a radio station that fully embraced these foibles. Notice that I use foibles three times. How often you hear that on the radio, right? 516-620-3602 is the number to call to show your financial support to a radio station that's been providing you a unique perspective of the world since 1960. 516-620-3602. Or go to give to WBAI.org online. Okay, we're going to try this again. So pretend that what has happened during the last 2.5 minutes didn't happen. So we're going to start all over. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. That's coming up right now. All righty. Milton, are you there? I don't think Milton can hear me. All right, we'll just try this again. Let's see. Milton? Okay, I just heard something there. Milton?
Can you hear me?
Oh, hallelujah. You're there.
Yes. Thank you, Comrade Engineer Reggie. I know the technical challenges are sometimes difficult when we're live
era
of the COVID pandemic, but thank you for making it happen.
Okay. So, all right. So why don't you start your program, please?
Okay. Very good. Greetings, sisters and brothers. Today, we're going to be looking at two stories. We're going to be looking at the trial of Donald Trump. And in the second half hour of the show, we're going to be having a discussion with a guest, Wegata Tesema. He's a Tigrayan-born New Yorker, and he's going to be telling us about a big protest that is going to be outside the UN on Thursday, and it's being billed as 100 days of Tigray genocide. So we'll hear more about that in the bottom half hour of today's show. But let's go straight to the discussion of the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Brother Colin Benjamin, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Very good. Colin Benjamin is my comrade, and he's the managing editor of Black Star News. Colin, what is your impression so far of what you've seen today with what I guess we could refer to as the opening arguments? And right now, they're just dealing with the issue of the constitutionality of this trial before they move into the trial itself. What have you seen so far, and what are your impressions?
Well, my impressions are really is that, you know, we're really seeing the Republican Party, not just Donald Trump, but the Republican Party. We're really seeing them get exposed more and more for being a party that just cares about careerism. And actually, I should also say that it's we should just start calling them the Trump white supremacist GOP party or something like that. As far as what I've seen so far, the videos, of course, are very powerful. I'm more looking at it because, you know, we pretty much know that the Republicans are not going to vote for convict, but I'm more looking at it from the standpoint of that.
Okay, well, let me interrupt you and ask you a little bit about that, Colin. Yes, we're going into this with the presumption that they're not going to convict. And I think I probably agree with you as well. At the same time, the as you mentioned, the video that they put together, the collage, was quite powerful. Do you think that will have no impact at all? It will not sway at least 17 Republicans?
No,
or you think they're coming in there saying, whatever happens here, we know we have to stand with Trump, because he, in fact, is still the face of the party?
The latter, as well as, you see, like I was just saying, they're being exposed as a party that just cares about careerism. We know that since Trump has been in, most of them have feared that he tweets or say anything about them, and they fear being primaried, right? What I would also say is that since the 6th, what they now also fear is those voters themselves. Because I think a lot of them realize that the same way that the Trump's MAGA mob came into the Capitol for them, that they could show up on their doorsteps, right? We've seen videos of them following people like Lindsey Graham through the airports and stuff like that.
So,
I think the vicious white supremacist hardcore bass people have them terrified as well as their fear of being primary.
That they could actually face a lynch mob outside their homes.
Absolutely. We already have incidents of things like that going on, right? So it's kind of the monster that they created now, because now it's not just the fear of the primary. No, it's fear of physical violence. And a lot of them know, too, that within the mob, you had police from, you know, different police forces across America, as well as military people. Because what the six was, it was really an attack, I believe, on the new emerging multiracial America, right? And that goes against the voters, the hardcore voters and the majority of the voters, the Republican Party. So because of that, and a lot of them, I agree that they might be moved, but I don't think they're going to be moved to act.
Okay, so let me go back to what you just alluded. So you're saying, in effect, this really, even though technically it's a trial, the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump, there is a bigger story out there. There's a bigger trial out there. It's a trial about the changing America and the elements that cannot tolerate or fear that changing America. And this story is not really just about Trump. That's what you're saying. Elaborate on that. And by the way, listeners, please feel free to join us in this conversation by calling up. You can call and get involved in this discussion with us. It's not just between me and Colin. Go ahead, Colin. Continue.
Well, let's be clear, right? Trump really was elected as the answer to Barack Obama, right? We should pretty much know by now that Obama's election was kind of like the world coming to an end for a lot of these people who believe that only white people should be in power, right? Now we have, you know, Kamala Harris, first black woman, first woman, first Jamaican Caribbean woman. So the whole thing with Trump being elected and the support that he got, it's all about white supremacy. And that's coming out clearly now. You know, the whole immigration thing, child separation, you know, children in cages, it's all a part of the same thing, that these folks who have been used to white people controlling everything, they see this, you know, I refer to it as the darkening demographics of America. They see it coming.
When you say darkening, you make it sound so sinister. Isn't there a better way of putting it?
Okay, the non-white, the new multiracial, like I said before, non-white America. But okay. I'm saying in their way, that's how they would look at it, right?
I understand. I'm just
all these darkies, you know. So,
and by the way, listeners, if you want to join in, please feel free to dial 212-209-9877. Obviously, we want to hear from you, especially if you want to comment on aspects of what you think is not being covered by the corporate media. And I like the fact that Colin is actually touching on a lot of those elements, because this is just, it's way beyond just the technical trial of a Donald Trump,
right?
Which leads me to the question I want to ask you now then, Colin. Mm-hmm. Implied in what you're suggesting is that even if Trump were to be convicted and were to be barred from ever running again from political office, you're saying that's hardly the beginning of the story. That is hardly the end. That's what you're clearly saying.
Correct.
So because tell us what you're saying.
Because let's be clear, it started before Trump, right? He just pretty much watched everything that's been happening in the Republican Party over all these decades, where, you know, it was a more kind of covert racist type of thing that they were doing. He just kind of went full throttle with it, right? And he also obviously seen the reaction of a lot of those people in what we could now call MAGA America to Barack Obama's election, right? So this is really what it is. And, you know, this is why the Republican Party is getting exposed now, because It's the monster that they created. Even some of them who might be somewhat critical of Trump or whatever, for all these decades, they have encouraged racists in their party, right? And I mean, look at how crazy it is that the QAnon Congresswoman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? She gets a standing ovation, they said, but Liz Cheney got censured right. by the Republicans in Wyoming. So, right. you know, so even if something were to happen to Trump, you got Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you're going to have others, right? There are going to be others. So, yeah, it's a very dangerous time, brother.
All right, so we'll get into that next question, but I want to remind listeners, you can only hear this kind of conversation because of the support of listeners such as you. This is commercial free. It is listener supported. That's why we can take any angle on any issue and we can take on any topic. But without your support, we can't do it. So at this point, I'd like to remind you, please pick up the phone and do be generous if you can. And dial 516-620-3602 and donate to WBAI. That number again is 516-620-3602. And you can even do something better. You can adopt one of our shows, one of our WBI shows, as a buddy. And of course, we'd like you to support Black Star News Show, in which case you would go to give, and then the number 2, WBI.org. And the money is taken out of your debit or credit card on a monthly basis. Colin, back to you. This yes, is sir. A question that you have written about in the past. And you were on top of it very, very early, even before this man had been elected president. You wrote about the role of corporate media in enabling this individual. Correct. And I want to ask you this. Do you think part of it was because a lot of the statements he was making was hostile toward Latinos, the ugly things he said about Mexicans, the hostile statements he made about people of African descent, his ridicule and continue to abuse the young man who survived the wrongful conviction in the so-called Central Park case. He was demonizing and abusing all these people, but he was not at that time yet taken that very vicious position he took toward corporate media. Do you think mm-hmm. that's why he was given a pass for such a long time?
Yeah, partially. I think ultimately too, right? They were using him as well, right? They were making a lot of money, right? And we remember what Moonves said, right? Might be bad for the country, but go ahead, Donald, right? So you know that I had already said from early on that, you know, when they were playing up even a lot of this Russia thing, I was saying from early on, it was all of the wall-to-wall coverage that they were giving him that legitimized him in the eyes of many Americans who don't really pay attention on a regular basis, but they were seeing him on TV all the time, and they figured, okay, he's a businessman. He's supposed to be a successful businessman. I'm seeing him on TV all the time, so that must mean he's doing well. And Moonves laid it out. So it's also the greed, right? The corporate greed. And I think what happened was after when they realized, because they know, but they won't say, they know that they're one of the main reasons why he got elected, then they started to go after him because it was kind of like they were trying to make amends, right? But that particular aspect, as you know, don't get talked about. The media isn't going to talk about their role in helping him to be there. I wouldn't even doubt that when he did The Apprentice, I wouldn't even doubt that they probably have tapes of him saying a lot of egregious stuff that we haven't even seen.
Right, but I like the fact that you're actually looking at the bigger aspect of the story. You're looking at beyond Trump, because, you know, if we don't provide any analysis or interpretation, it's really useless. It's not like as if there's not going to be another Trump down the line, or that there are not many Trumps, you know, waiting in the wing. And that is clearly evidenced by the fact that he's still getting massive support from the so-called mainstream Republican leadership. But Collins, I want to also ask you this other question then. Trump, yes, he has emboldened all these white supremacists. The white supremacists that really started emerging in massive numbers, as you said, when Barack Obama was elected president. But should we also not spend time examining the role of capital and the ever increasing concentration of wealth within a small margin, and what this is doing to the middle class? And this is not to excuse white supremacists at all, but we have to acknowledge what the economic concentration of wealth is also doing to the rest of the country. Isn't that obvious?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, and yes to all of that. When you first started saying that, my mind went to a story I saw in ESPN where they were talking about how, you know, you had all these, you know, sports teams, the owners of the sports teams, and even some of them who, you know, belatedly coming out now and trying to, you know, pretend that they care about social justice, how much more they donated to, like, Republicans, you know, because they like the wealth inequality. They like to not pay no taxes. So you're exactly right. And I mean, I think we know that historically, you know, one of the ways that racism is used is also to skewer the whole economic situation that's going on. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, like, I personally love a lot of the times what Bernie Sanders is trying to do, because he's always trying to bring focus to that very issue.
Right. So, I mean, I agree with you, because, I mean, Collins, if we just keep focusing on Trump alone, not to say that we don't want him to be actually tried and convicted. Of course, we want that to happen. But that cannot be the story, because then, in a way, the Democrats also then are, you know, we're giving them a pass by ignoring the economic element in this entire story that is going on in these United States, you know. And I think that doesn't do anybody any benefit at all. We should allow them to take advantage of, yes, we have this demonic former president who does need to be convicted. But you should go ahead and say, okay, that means we shouldn't put you to task when it comes to economic issues in this country. So I want to ask you just one final question, because we're going to be running out of time. But I want to just make another observation, which I've made in the past several times on this program, that a wealthy individual whom I know, whom I consider a friend, actually said this to me. And by now, I guess it would be like 8 years ago or even more. And he said, Milton, the middle class has disappeared in this country. There's only people like me and everybody else, referring to himself. And he is indeed a billionaire. And this is what he said. He said, there's going to be social upheaval in this country. And if they think they can use the military to suppress it, they're out of their minds. It's not going to work. And to me, it seems that we're seeing some of that on display now. But the question I have for you, Colin, as we wrap up, is this. What will ultimately happen in this country? Because you're saying this is beyond Trump. What do you think? I know it's very speculative. I'm putting you on task here.
What will happen, you mean, what, into the future? Are you talking about, like, right now? Or when you say what will happen?
No, I mean, you've been talking beyond Trump, so I want you to talk beyond Trump. I mean, is it going to be just business as usual? We have a Democrat, a Republican coming in, or at some point Will something force both parties to address the economic issues that is actually the base or the substructure of the crises that we're seeing in the political dimension?
I think it's not going to be either of them that do it. I think it's we the people in the new emerging America. We're going to have to force the issue. When last year, you know too as well, right, for how long that I had been writing and complaining about the fact that the Congress, you know, wasn't saying much about racial policing. And look how relatively quickly after the George Floyd protest, all of a sudden you see that, you know, it's true that we haven't got tangible change yet. But look at how fast some of them started to come out with bills and different things. It's going to have to be us as a united new America of multiracial people. We're going to have to get together. We're going to have to force the change on them. It's on us.
I agree with you. It's the political and economic transformation. All right, listeners, that was Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. And, of course, we invite you to visit blackstarnews.com. We're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, you'll listen to my interview with Wegata Tesema regarding the upcoming protest of 100 days of Tigray genocide. Welcome to Black Star News on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Today, we want to look at a tragic situation that has been unfolding for more than 3 months now in Tigray, one of the nations that make up the Federal Republic of Ethiopia. There's a protest that's going to be held February 11, right outside the United Nations. So I'm going to be discussing this with Wegata Tesema. He is one of the organizers. The organization putting it together is called the Tri-State Tegaru Advocacy Group. Welcome to Black Star News Show, Wegata Tesema.
Thank you very much for having me. Honored to be here.
All right, very good. So was it 2 years ago that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed of Ethiopia was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize? Today, correct, we have a humanitarian disaster that has been unfolding in Tigray. We hear reports of ethnic cleansing, targeting of civilians. Not even the armed forces are involved in the conflict. Tell us what's really going on in Tigray, and what is the reasons, the main factors behind this conflict?
Well, what is going on in Tigray is actually the real issue we're gathered here today. The atrocities that we know that is happening is beyond damaging to people, to humans. But we're not afraid of what we know. We're terrified of what we don't know, what is happening under the darkness of a law and order attempt to clean an area. Almost February 11th is going to be the 100 days of this war, 100 days of genocide. And the last time 100 days of genocide occurred under darkness, it was in Rwanda, and over 800,000 people died. So right now, what's happening on February 11th is that we're trying to bring awareness. We're trying to bring light to the situation right now in Tigray, a small region in Ethiopia. Our prime minister, as you stated earlier, that won the Nobel Peace Prize, is under darkness without allowing anybody to get in, killing, raping, starving the Tigrayan people. A people of just farmers trying to develop their land. And unfortunately, you know, this is not a political issue we are fighting. We're fighting a humanitarian issue where starvation and rape are being used as a weapon to wipe out a society. And I'm asking all, this is not an African issue. This is not an American issue. This is a humane issue. In the year 2021, genocide cannot occur under our watch. It's not acceptable. So all the brothers and sisters that know about this, they're bringing awareness. We're coming to the United Nations. The United Nations themselves have said this, that what is happening inside Ethiopia needs to stop.
So Wegata, for American listeners that are not entirely familiar with the background issues, Prime Minister Abiy is saying that he had to intervene with the Federal National Army to prevent secession in Tigray, and that if he did not take any action, other regions of Ethiopia would break up. That is what he's saying. What do you want to tell Americans about that in terms of your response to what Abiy has been saying?
Abiy has been saying many things. Abiy has also said that not a single human casualty has occurred in this war. He has said that the TPLF, which is a ruling party, which was one of the big ruling parties in Ethiopia, is a terrorist organization. He has said many things. And what we ask Abiy Ahmed is, please, let the United Nations, let outside media in and show the world what you are saying. Show us.
So there's a media blackout and an internet shutdown. Is that correct?
100%. On November 4th, this is when Abiy Ahmed declared war on Tigray. At the moment right now, there are more than 61,000 refugees have sought out in Sudan. Over 2.2 million have been internally displaced. We have over 2.3 million Tigrayan children have been cut off from food. There are people starving and dying. Imagine a war is occurring in a rural area and there's nobody to watch it. We have seen this before. Unfortunately, when there's no accountability, what men are capable of doing under darkness, we have seen atrocities. So we're asking Abiy Ahmed, which is also an unelected official, by the way. The whole thing, this thing started because Tigrayan region, which in the constitution, which is written in the Ethiopian constitution, any region has the right, constitutional right, to secede. But this is not a political issue we're trying to fight right now. So if Tigray wants to secede, they have every right to. But this is not what the issue is. The issue right now is we have people that are starving. He's not allowing people to come in to help. Wars are wars. There's a right way and a legal way if there's a war to fight. We're asking for a constitutional right to a human being to feed himself, to get proper medication, to live without the thought of being raped or being killed on a daily basis. So we're asking the international community to put pressure. We're asking the normal, average American, please look into this. We're talking to your governors, talk to your officials, put the pressure, because the only time we know governments move is when the human being, the citizen, pressure the government. So we as Americans, I am an American citizen. I'm a United States Marine, but my family is being wiped home back in Ethiopia, back in Tigray. So I'm asking Americans, please stand up with us, fight with us, make noise. That's all we're asking. Bring light to the darkness and help us bring light to the genocide that's occurring in Tigray, Ethiopia.
Okay, we got that. So tell us a little bit about yourself then, so listeners can know who is giving us this account.
Okay, well, I myself, actually, I'm a father of two. I have a three-year-old and a two-year-old. And my main job, I work in Phelps Hospital in Sleepy Hollow, New York. And that was my main thing. I was living my life until November 4th. November 4th is when the military attacked, you know, my area, my region. At that point, a bunch of diaspora people that were living in New York and Connecticut, New Jersey said, we have to do something. You know, we can't go over there and fight, but we have to do our aspect of it here. And the beauty of this country is that we have a right to raise our voices. You should not. America has its challenges, but the right of freedom of speech is huge. So unfortunately, our countrymen in Tigray are been silenced. Abiy has taken off the internet. He's cut off banks. He's cut off food. He's cut off all types of supplies. He's literally starving this area. And this has happened before, by the way, a regime where when I was a kid, I left Ethiopia when I was 10 years old because of a civil war. I escaped Ethiopia to come to this country and now helped Ethiopia while I was here with our family to remove a regime, a dictatorship. And then after that, there was 30 years of challenges, but peace. And now that peace has been thrown away. The generation that has fought for that peace is now dancing in their graves. We're dancing over their graves because many have died for this. So I'm asking all of our people here who have the voices, who has the media, to let the world know. Media is the most powerful change that can occur because it illuminates darkness. You can't hide. Once the truth comes out, we have seen it. But unfortunately, we don't want the truth to come out too late. When there's 6 million people right now under darkness who might be going through genocide. They're not that many, 6 million, compared to 101 of all of Ethiopia. So we're asking our people. I'm not an activist. I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm a volunteer who's with other volunteers are trying to bring light to the situation. That's all we're trying to do. There are babies dying. I'm sorry.
Wegata, with the information blackout, where are some of the reports coming from? I know there were some reports that were coming out from the humanitarian aid workers that were still operating in that part of the country at one point. Where's much of the information coming from now? And what are some of the reports that you've been hearing?
A lot of reports are coming from the refugees, firsthand reports that are fleeing the area, running into Sudan, running to the neighboring countries because of what's going on. And we're hearing reports of, I can't even say, but like weaponized rape. We're hearing these reports. We've also heard reports of Eritrea, our neighboring country, in our land, in Ethiopia, which is an international incident and is against the rules. Yet the U.S. Embassy in Asmara, Eritrea, posted on Facebook page, and I quote, "The United States has asked the Eritrean government to withdraw its forces from the Tigray immediately. We have conveyed our grave concerns about credible reports of human rights abuses committed by the Eritrean forces and other actors in Tigray. We continue to call for independence and transparent investigation into reports of looting, sexual violence, assaults in refugee camps, and other human rights abuses, and accountability for those responsible." So the U.S. and everybody else, I'm sorry, knows this is happening. They know it's happening. But unfortunately, due to sovereignty and politicals and all these challenges, men and women and babies and so forth are dying, and they know it, but they are not moving. So we're asking the UN, we're asking everybody, please put pressure on the government through sanctions, through any type of political means. We're asking for a humanitarian corridor into Tigray. We need to bring food. We have it available. There are doctors ready to go in. There's so many healthcare workers ready to go in on the borders of Sudan. There's money, there's food available to go in, but it can't go in unless there's a way. And right now, the Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, is blocking that way for regular human beings who have nothing to do with the war, not fighting, not military, to get aid.
So, Wegata, the airports are not operating in Tigray. Communications and commerce cut off. I mean, not everybody has managed to, of course, flee the country. What about the millions that are still, the region, rather? What about the millions that are still there? How are they accessing food or water? and medical supplies?
The answer to that, my friend, unfortunately, is they are not. The food is depleting. They're not receiving food. They're not literally, there are reports today of family members. We have these groups that talk to each other, try to get information from when the little satellite is up. And they're reporting that their family members are dying from starvation, period. We're an area, it's a very rural area where most of our farm, they're farmers. Most Ethiopians are farmers. Most Tigrayans are farmers. So during this war, when Abiy Ahmed started, it was during a time of harvest when people are getting ready. And now they literally just had to get up and leave. There are stories of these refugee camps where they're saying people walked for miles and miles, days and weeks on end, without food, without water. So right now, what is happening is that the people are starving. There is no food. There is no medicine. There is no water coming into this region. So they're doing what they can to survive, but they are dying, dying.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio. Also streaming on WBAI.org. And I'm your host, Milton Alimadi. My guest today is Wegata Tesema, and we are discussing the conflict in Tigray, the invasion of Tigray by the Ethiopian Federal Army, and Tigray is a part of Ethiopia. We're discussing the humanitarian catastrophe that is going on there. Listeners, you can only get this kind of discussion on WBAI, not on corporate commercial radio. And how do we do this? We do this because we are listener supported. We rely on your support, your contributions. So, listeners, I do remind you, be generous. Pick up the phone and dial 516-620-3602. Once again, 516-620-3602. You can even do better. You can adopt Black Star News Show or any other show on WBAI as a buddy, in which case the money is taken out on a monthly basis from your credit card or your debit card. You can do that by going to give and then the number 2 and then WBAI.org. Listeners, this is quality programming. You don't get this anywhere else. So I do urge you, times are tough, but whatever you can donate will be put to good use. Now back to my guest. Wegata, tell listeners why Eritrea is involved in this war.
Okay. Prior to this war, Eritrea and Ethiopia were at conflict. The president of Eritrea, his name is Isaias Afwerki, is actually wanted by the UN for many humanitarian atrocity that has occurred within that country. So at one point, Ethiopia and Eritrea were one. They fought together. Tigray and Eritrea fought together against a Derg regime in the past, a military regime. And once that civil war was over,
Mengistu Haile Mariam, correct?
Haile Mariam Mengistu, correct. General Haile Mariam Mengistu. That's actually when I was 10 years old, when I left Ethiopia. That's when the war occurred, about 30 years ago. And so, but after that war was over, Eritrea decided to secede, which is in the constitution. Any region in the country is permitted to secede. But in doing so, in secession, there was conflict, political issues, and there was a war about land, you know, border issue. And that war lasted for 2 years. And it was decided nobody had won the war, but it was more of a stalemate, but there was an agreement. And 2 years ago, the reason why Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed won the Nobel Peace Prize, one of the main reasons was that he collaborated a peace treaty with Isaias Afwerki to open up the borders, right, in which the international community thought was a great idea. He was placing, women into positions, and he was changing, you know, he's trying to bring more democracy into the country, as he stated, and he won the Nobel Peace Prize for doing that. Right. But to this day, nobody knows the details of that Nobel Peace Prize. It was done behind closed doors between Prime Minister and the President of Eritrea to this day. And a few months later, borders were closed again. But because he has that relationship with Eritrea now, he was able to use that relationship to bring in Eritrean forces from the north. So anybody knows the region of Horn of Africa or Ethiopia, Tigray literally now is landlocked on top by Eritrea and below by Ethiopia and its forces. So it is being squeezed from all ends. And our military, our little Tigray region military, it knows how to fight. It has fought wars before. It knows how to defend itself. It never goes on the attack and so forth or go forth, but it knows how to defend itself. It has done so in the past. So it is doing that right now. It is doing that on all forces. And Isaias has a hatred against Tigray to start with. But I don't want this to be a political issue either, what we're doing on 11, but we're bringing news to what's going on. That needs to get dealt with. I'm on the opinion of that. The war in Ethiopia has been brewing for many, many, many decades, and it was never a solution to it. We have to take the war out of the streets, into the boardrooms, into the media, into the people, let them vote what they want. Our political leaders have failed us at the moment right now in the country. So we're asking for the people not to suffer because of that. So please, and as you stated earlier about WBAI, I'm a big proponent of WBAI and public radio. One of the challenges happening in Ethiopia is that our media is controlled by the state. So whatever being put out, the propaganda is being put out, is not the truth. WBAI and listeners, this is the truth you're listening to. It's unfiltered. There's no governments involved. These are the people talking. So again, support WBA. I know I'm not saying this, but know the truth will come out.
We appreciate that. And yes, our listeners do know the value of listener-supported radio. Now, Weganta, let me ask you a little bit about the protests then. Where are the participants going to be coming from for this demonstration? And what are some of the key demands? And to whom will these demands be directed?
Well, this is 100 days of genocide, and where people are coming from right now, thank God to the internet and so forth, from all over the country, believe it or not. Mainly, we have a big population in Washington, D.C. We had a protest there. We're having protests throughout the country, by the way. There's a protest being held right now in almost every city, every state where there are Ethiopians. But the tri-state community, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, also people from Boston, people from Atlanta, anyone that can make it, are coming here to the United Nations. And we have different ways of protesting. We're asking the United Nations to put pressure on Abiy Ahmed, our prime minister. Our main goal is to bring in humanitarian aid to the people that are dying. We can't, and that's our main objective here, to fight and to bring light to what is happening. We're doing different ways of protesting. Initially, which is the initial plan, we're in front of the United Nations, but we're expecting overflow. And with that overflow, we are directing people to another area, and we will let you guys know at that day how that's working. We're working with the police. We're working with the permit. And another way we're doing also is that we know there's COVID challenges. We know it's cold, and we know some people might not want to be around other people. So we're asking people to decorate their cars in the red and yellow, which is the colors for that day. Red and yellow is the theme. That is our flag. We're going to be flying Tigrayan flag, American flag, United Nations flags. All flags that are against genocide are welcome. Ethiopian, any type of flags. If you're against genocide, please bring them. And also, if you don't want, I'm sorry, go ahead.
What time? What time exactly? It's on February 11th, right? And what time?
February 11th, and we're starting from 10. 10 to 3. 10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. We have speakers. We have all kinds of demonstrations occurring. We have a caravan. I was saying earlier, if you don't want to be at the protest, you're more than welcome to bring your car, decorate it. And we're going to be traveling through Manhattan, making noise and letting people know what's going on in Tigray, Ethiopia.
And that's at 47th Street and 1st Avenue at the UN, correct?
Correct. United Nations, the Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, 47th Street, 1st Avenue, February 11th from 10 to 3.
Okay, so you're asking, you want the UN to bring this issue up before the Security Council, is that it?
Yes, it is.
And what about in terms of demands made to the United States government? What is the demand?
We're asking the United States government at the moment supports the Ethiopian government on paper. You know, Ethiopia has always been the stabilization of the Horn of Africa. So there was a good relationship with the U.S. Most of the U.N. security forces that go into the Horn of Africa come from Ethiopia, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. So one of the challenges is that Ethiopia has always been that region, that police in that area. So now that police needs to be policed. And so we're asking the...
So it's considered an ally. So
yes, we're asking them to denounce that ally and put pressure on Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed.
Well, what are some of the statements so far that have come out by the U.S., the new administration? Has there been any statement on this situation?
Yes, actually. One moment, there was a statement on February 5th, 2021. The United Nations said that it has received reports of serious human rights violations and abuses committed by the parties to the conflict in the Tigray region and their allies. These include extrajudicial killings, sexual violence, looting of property, mass executions, and impeded humanitarian access. Also, our efforts prior to the new administration were kind of blocked, unfortunately. The prior administration, the Trump administration, was almost pro-Abiy, unfortunately. But now with the new administration, with Biden, we're making ways. It has been acknowledged, and they said that they're going to, you know, I guess, work on it.
Okay, so the UN, what you read was a statement from the UN, but in terms of the U.S., there hasn't been a public statement yet. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good.
So not that I know of.
Okay, so we're going to be running out of time. Is there anything else about this protest? Or let me ask you this. What if Prime Minister Abiy simply ignores the international opinion? Then what happens?
Well, usually if he ignores it, then what the international community does is, you know, they push sanctions. They press sanctions on the government, not to give it support, because the government still is in need of aid. Ethiopia receives a lot of aid from the foreign affairs. We're also asking United Arab Emirates have been given droids and helping out military-wise to the Ethiopian government. We're asking them to stop. So there's a lot of outside forces that are helping. So we're hoping that if he does not listen, these forces, the U.S. and the U.N. can put a coalition of sanctions against the government to help our efforts. And then from there, I'm not familiar with the political corridors. I do not know how that works, but that is our first objective.
All right. So this is just an observation, and perhaps you can react to this. You know, the saddest part of this is that Ethiopia is one of the most vibrant countries in Africa with a long history, a civilization dating back centuries, where religions, Christianity, Islam thrived for centuries before Europe was quote-unquote civilized. And even in recent years, Ethiopia has one of the most dynamic economies in Africa. Every part of Ethiopia, you have entrepreneurial people, Tigray, you name it, every part. And it's so sad to see this kind of conflict unraveling most of these success. So this is just an observation. Would you like to comment on that as well before we close up?
100%, and you are correct. And Ethiopia was on that path, you know? A few years ago, at one point, Ethiopia's dollar was 1 to 2 to the U.S. We were building dams. We have international communities coming to build subways, the African Union building headquarters. And we were on that path. And we're still on that path. Unfortunately, a leader has come in to take us a step backwards. And that's all we're asking. And also to our African-American brothers here, know your history. Things that are being destroyed in Tigray are religious artifacts, and churches are being burnt, and schools, things that have been kept for centuries are being destroyed. So to African-American community, this is an African-American month and Black Lives Matter movement, your history is being destroyed back home. Your origin, Ethiopia, the land of the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant is there, Abyssinia. The origin of man is being destroyed. Humanity is being destroyed, and we're asking our brothers and sisters, no, please, know your history and help us so we can have a future.
Okay, so once again, this February 11 outside the UN, that is where the protest is, and it's 47th Street and 1st Avenue. And what time did you say it starts?
It starts at 10 a.m. From 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., that's when we're having the protest.
Okay, now, in case people want to get in touch with you and continue this conversation, are you on social media? Is there an email? Is there any way they can reach you?
100%. My personal email is Wegahta, WEGAHTA @gmail.com. That is my personal email. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Clubhouse, brand new app that is helping us tremendously. Also, if people want to volunteer, they want to help that day or in any way, there's an email you can go to at contact@tristatetagaru.org. Again, contact@tristatetagaru, which is TRISTATETEGARU.org. Please send us an email how you can help or have any ideas. We're more than welcome. We need more. The more, the merrier. We're making enough noise in New York so that our Tigrayan brothers in Ethiopia can hear us, because they do receive these, and this gives them hope to keep on fighting. They're giving their life and their time and their, you know, for us to give our voices. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you so much. That's all the time we have. Stay strong, and I wish you the best, and remain Pan-African. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless everybody.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. The second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump is now underway. The trial starts with a four-hour debate on the constitutionality of the proceeding. After playing footage of the January 6th Capitol siege, lead House impeachment manager, Representative Jamie Raskin, said the former President Trump's actions inciting the riot constitute a, quote, high crime and misdemeanor. Senator Joe Neguse of Colorado continued on after on the Senate floor, saying that there is in fact historical precedence for this impeachment. David Cicilline of Rhode Island also made remarks on the Senate floor as well. After the argument, the Senate will vote on the constitutionality question. The threshold to pass is a simple majority of 51 votes. If the trial is deemed constitutional, the Senate will proceed with up to 16 hours per side to present their case beginning at noon Eastern Time on Wednesday. If Trump is convicted, the Senate then votes on whether to bar him from seeking any federal office in the future. That vote requires a simple majority. During the proceedings, President Biden was asked about today's impeachment trial, where he answered that he's focused on the job of being president. Continuing on, he stressed the dire state of the pandemic, saying, quote, we've already lost over 450,000 people, and we're going to start to lose a whole lot more if we don't act and act decisively and quickly. A lot of people, as I said, a lot of children are going to bed hungry. A lot of families are food insecure. That's my job. House Democrats rejected a Republican proposal to cut off new $1,400 stimulus checks from individuals earning over $50,000 per year and families earning over $100,000. Though the Democrats' bill also establishes an income threshold for direct payments, it offers twice what Republicans proposed. Under the Democratic plan, individuals earning below $75,000 a year would receive a full check, and payments would taper off for those earning between $75,000 and $100,000. Joint filers together earning less than $150,000 qualify for full checks. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has deported at least 72 people to Haiti, including a two-month-old baby and 21 other children. The deportations appear to be a contradiction of the Biden administration's order to deport only people that had serious charges against them. Haiti faces an increase in political violence and ongoing protests against the president, Jovenel Moïse, who is backed by the U.S. Gerline Joseph, a co-founder and executive director of the organization Haitian Bridge Alliance, says, quote, we should be providing protections for those people, but we are sending them into a burning house. In Washington, D.C., 145 new coronavirus cases were reported yesterday, making a total of 38,000 confirmed cases. Over 5% of tests in the district came back positive yesterday. D.C. reported 5 new COVID-19-related deaths, bringing total fatalities to 961. Maryland reported 976 new cases for a total of over 365,000. Over 5% of coronavirus tests in the state are positive. Maryland reported 41 new confirmed COVID-19-related deaths, bringing fatalities to a total of 7,234. Virginia added nearly 3,300 new cases today. Mayor Muriel Bowser announced this morning that Washington, D.C. is upgrading its unemployment system by